if you would be, turning to 2 Kings, 13th chapter. It's where we're going to start. One of the things that I like to do is find some things that we don't think about too often and then see what I can find, see what I can learn from something. I like to think about some of the stories, the Old Testament stories. A lot of times when we teach the kids the Old Testament stories, we only got enough time to hit the highlights. And so we don't tend to go for the little stories. Well, there's this little story in here that's just kind of curious to me, and I thought, well, let's just kind of look at it, see what's in this little story, and then see what we can learn from it. Okay, this story starts, 2 Kings 13, starts at verse 14. Now, when Elisha had fallen sick with the illness of which he was to die, Joash, king of Israel, went down to him and wept before him, crying, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. And Elisha said to him, take a bow and arrows. So he took a bow and arrows. Then he said to the king of Israel, draw the bow. And he drew it. And Elisha laid his hand on the king's hand. And he said, open the window eastward. And he opened it. Then Elisha said, shoot. And he shot. And he said, the Lord's arrow of victory, the arrow of victory over Syria, for you shall fight the Syrians at Aphek until you've made an end of them. And he said, take the arrows. And he took them. And he said to the king of Israel, strike the ground with them. And he struck three times and stopped. Then the man of God was angry with him and said, you should have struck five or six times. Then you would have struck down Israel until you've made an end of it. But now you will strike down Israel, Syria only three times. Okay, here's kind of the cool thing. We're starting here with a story, and it's kind of the last thing that Elisha is going to do, and he tells the king to do some really weird things. I mean, just like strange, weird. He says, I want you to take some arrows, shoot one out the window. Just think about what that's like. You know, if you just, okay, shoot an arrow out the window, don't you kind of wonder where it's going to land? Prophet says, shoot, he shot. Then the prophet says, you'll be victorious. And then he says, now strike the ground. Now, strike, in the version I'm using, uses the word strike, and I think actually most of them use strike, but the sense of the word more is like beat. And the thing about the word beat is beat doesn't have an end point. You know, if I say strike, strike almost gives the impression I want you to hit one time. You know, strike the rock, you only have to hit it once and you've struck the rock. But if you beat something, it's just, it's kind of like, how long do you want me to beat it? And so we're left kind of wondering, okay, so why did the king stop it three times? And that's one of the things I like to look at is kind of, so why did he stop it three times? Now, this, of course, is going to be a little bit on speculation because the Bible doesn't say why he stopped it three times, but, you know, maybe he overanalyzed it. He just looked at it and said, well, beat means more than once. Two is plenty. Well, three for good measure. I fulfilled the command. I did it three times. Maybe that's what he did. Or maybe he was just overcautious. You know, Elisha's not feeling well. If I start hitting the ground too much, I might, you know, just jar him or something and, you know, then he'd die, and then I'd feel guilty and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, maybe he was just a little overcautious. Possibly he's just not humble. It's kind of like, you know what? I'm an important person. Yes, prophets told me to beat. I just shot the thing out the window. I'm doing what he said to do. He said beat. I'm beat. You know, I'm an important person. I can't be doing silly things all day. Or possibly it's just habit. You know, he's the king, got a lot of things to do, kind of gets in the habit of just, you know, I've got to move on. Yep, okay, I got to beat. Okay, I've done a beat, what's next? You know, so kind of keep the pace going. Now, it doesn't say what his actual reason is, and any one of them, all of them, it doesn't really matter. Because what ended up happening is Elisha gets mad at him. And I find that fascinating. Elisha gets mad at him even though he did what he was told. See, he wasn't told to do it over and over again until the arrows broke. He didn't say, how far. He just was told what to do. And you notice there's a couple of things that are kind of interesting about this. Is the king himself, let's say, he did what he's told, and he's going to be blessed. And one of the things that I think is always fascinating is it's kind of like a lot of stories in the Bible. A lot of times we start to look at somebody's failure and we forgot that they did something successful right before it. You know, like when Jesus walks on the water, we forget that Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water too. You know, it's just kind of automatic. We just start, we think about Peter sinking. Peter got out of the boat. I mean, that's pretty good. Well, the king here, he did what he was supposed to do. He got up and he did what he was supposed to do, and he's going to be blessed for having done what he's going to do. So why was Elisha mad? Elisha was mad because he could have gotten more. He was not going to get everything that was possible. Now think about how that fits to us. It's possible to get more. Now a lot of times we feel like we're very blessed people. But because we're very blessed people, we don't even think in the realm of what's even possible beyond being blessed. We don't even think, it's kind of like, oh, I'm already going to be victorious. We could be like the king. I'm going to be victorious. This is great news. I mean, I'm sorry that Elisha's dying, but this is great news. I'm going to be victorious. But because he didn't do it with the energy that he was looking for, he wasn't going to go beyond. So what's that word? What's that word that we're missing that the king missed? That word is zeal. Zeal for something a little bit more. Now think about what zeal means. God is expecting us to be interested in his word. Is that a good statement? Well, of course it's a good statement. Let's turn over to Matthew, the 22nd chapter. I'm going to do the same thing that Steve did, but I don't know that I'm as fast as he was. So, 22nd chapter, starting down verse 37. He says, "You shall love the Lord your God a little bit, some of the time, and while you're thinking about it." Oh, hold on a second. It doesn't say that. It says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. For this is the first and the greatest commandment." Notice how much it's there. Again, like Steve said this morning, it's that nasty word all. All of it. It's zeal. I want all of it. I want you to be... See, the king was interested in doing what Elisha told him to do. But that's not what God... That's not where the max benefits were. There is benefit in just being interested. The maximum benefit is being enthusiastic, being that person that goes beyond, the intense desire. Let's look over in Romans. Now I'm going to read Romans 12 a little bit out of order, because I think this is kind of cool. But I read it just a little out of order, starting down in verse 11. Romans 12. Now, I'm reading from the English Standard Version, so mine's going to have a few different words than yours if you're reading something else. "Do not be slothful in zeal. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saint and seek to show hospitality." Notice I started off verse 11 talking about zeal. It says, don't be slothful in zeal. Now, we all know what a sloth is because they had that Zootopia. And so everybody now knows what a sloth is. So if you never knew what a sloth was, you knew that from that show. That's the one that goes real slow. That's the animal that somebody said burns 60 calories a day or something like that. It doesn't burn up much. Okay, don't be slothful in zeal. Don't be lazy in what you're supposed to be doing. Now let's jump back to verse 9. "Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal. Now, just think about where this zeal word is sandwiched in. Well, now I'm behind on my charts here. It's right there between some things that are very uplifting. That verse 9 through 11, honor, joy, patience, and those other positives, love, devotion, share. It's an attribute. It's something that goes just a little bit beyond just being a list item. You know, a lot of times we understand that, matter of fact, we see the joy. We like joy. Joy's a pretty good one. Love, that one's easy. But he's got devotion and share, honor and patience, but the middle word is zeal. The one that's right between them. So there's seven words there that describe us, the middle word, the one that kind of like is the turning point. It goes from one set, the uplifting, to the positive, right in the middle of zeal. Now, what does zeal do for us? Zeal takes energy. I had a professor, it was a math course, and you know, to be honest, it was probably the most boring kind of math course. I mean, for some of you, I know all math courses are boring, but especially the high schoolers. But this was probably the most boring math class it was. It was linear algebra, and I was taking it at the graduate level. And all linear algebra is a lot of addition and subtraction. You know, by the time you get to your master's level, you kind of think you're beyond add and subtract. And here he is. He is just bouncing all over the class. He comes in. He's energetic. He starts writing on the board. He doesn't stop for the entire hour. One day he comes in. He's getting ready for the class. And he looked like, you know, a coach. And he was 75 years old, too, at the time. He looked like a coach just ready to get going. And one of the guys in the class says, okay, hold on, stop on. He says, even you have got to say this is the most boring material in the world. How in the world can you have so much fun with this? And he just kind of looked at it. He says, you know, that's a great question. Probably the best one I've gotten in this class so far. He said, I had a choice when I came into this class. I've been teaching this class for 45 years. I can guarantee you there's not one thing I'm telling you that I haven't said 1,000 times over. He says, I could come in here and just say, you know, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this class. I'm sick of the teaching this stuff. Okay, here we go. Put up this matrix. Let's go and add this column, then add these rows. You know, and we could just make this drag out, and then you'd all be bored, and I'm bored, and none of us would get anything out of it. Or I could come in here and I just keep my feet on the ground, off the ground. And he did. And that's actually one of the things I learned. Never let your heels touch the ground while you're teaching. And it just seems like you're bouncing the whole time. And you are, actually. You're bouncing and you're excited. And guess what? That excitement is infectious. That excitement goes on beyond where you're at, where you are right now. It also takes a lot of energy. Try it sometime. Try to stand for an hour and never let your heels touch the ground. I'm sure that's more than 60 calories a day. All right? For those that are doing that. All right. It requires something of a desire. It can be artificial. It's one of the funny things about zeal. Zeal can be artificial for only a little while. You fake it until you actually start to actually believe in it. It's infectious to yourself. It's infectious to everyone else. If you're excited about something, you go beyond the norm. Matter of fact, I can tell, I actually hesitated to teach this in Alabama because I know that about half of you at least here are Auburn fans and the other half are Alabama fans, and then there's Sherry and I who don't care. I can tell when I see an Alabama fan, because the first day you'll be wearing red, and you know that funny orange color that the Auburn people wear, First day of the football season, you'll be wearing orange. It doesn't matter if it violates the dress code at work, you will still wear it. And if you have to, you'll get a monogrammed shirt on there that has your A on it, and it'll look professional, and you'll still wear a tie. Of course, the tie will have A, all the way down. I know what you're going to look like on the first. Guess what? I think you probably believe in your football team. You have zeal for your football team. Now, zeal for football teams is all well and good, I guess, as long as they have a winning season. But that's not what we're interested in. That's not what God's interested in. He put zeal in that list. That list there says, I'm going backwards. I can't go to that. It takes energy. It requires the joy of doing something. It requires some energy. Guess what happens when you come to a class energized? Everybody else comes to the class energized. Guess what happens when you're not the teacher and you come to a class energized? The class gets energized. It doesn't have to be the person up front who's energized. It just has to be someone. Matter of fact, it really needs to be everyone. You know, a lot of times people say, I don't get anything out of church. I don't get anything out of it. No kidding. I don't know that I've gotten anything out of church in 40-some years that I didn't put in first. And I come in, and it's the idea is to be part of the what's going on. Think faster. Do something. Be a part of what's going on, because that's the thing that God's looking for. Now, where would we apply this other than everywhere? Okay, let's see. I've got a couple of lists here. One of the things I'm going to have to do is start. I had my, I don't know if you know this, a couple of years ago I had a retina tear, and they had to change around my vision a little bit, and now this podium is at the wrong distance for me. Okay, there's always a lot of things to do in a congregation. It doesn't matter what the congregation is, where they're at, there are things to do. One of them is being in being here. How can you show joy? How can you show zeal in attendance? Pretty easy to show zeal in attendance. The ones who are here first are showing a little more zeal than the ones who are showing up late. Think about that. Think about showing up late in attendance. What does that mean? Does that mean, well, at least I came? Okay, yep, I'll grant that. Yeah, at least I came. But that's not what we're going for. We're going for the zeal. We're going for the big piece. So we're wanting to come here a little earlier and a little earlier and a little earlier. And we're trying to beat every... Now, it can be like some congregations, 45 minutes till and some people are showing up before the whole thing starts. Okay, wow. Those are some tough people to beat. But you got to admire their dedication, even if you don't understand it, like me. Okay, go teach. How can you show zeal and go teach? We all know that. Mark 16:15. Steve quoted it this morning. Go, teach. So how do we show zeal? Well, we could show zeal in the way that we teach. We could show zeal in the classes that we teach here, but we could also show zeal in how we approach others in our day-to-day life. Go visit. James 2:27, go visit the fatherly, the fatherless and the widows, the orphans and the widows, depending on your translation. Again, how do you do that? How do you show zeal for that? Is that show zeal by, okay, I guess it's my turn. All right, I'm here to visit you. Better be happy about it. Nice meeting you. Bye. I mean, you have an opportunity. You can do that. Encouraging one another, 1 Thessalonians 5:11. I like that. Encourage one another. Okay, I guess I need to encourage you. Good job. Come on. Is that all we really have? Is just a little bit? Or do we want to go beyond? Do we want to look to see what's beyond just, yes, did you do it? Yes. But can you go beyond a little bit? Matter of fact, I'd like to look at one more example here. This only lifts other people up. Okay, Mark 14, verses 1 through 9. A little bit longer story, but let's go over to Mark 14. Verses 1 through 9. I'm sorry. I have it 1 through 9, but I really want to start it. Well, it's 2 days before the Passover. Let's skip down to 3. And while he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he was reclining at the table, a woman came with an alabaster flask of pure ointment, of pure nard, very costly. She broke the flask and poured it over his head. There were some who said to themselves indignantly, "Why was this ointment wasted like that? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor." And they scolded her. But Jesus said, "Leave her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, and whenever you want, you can do good for them. But you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial. And truly, I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her." Now, I find this really a cool story. I mean, it's you know, the Elijah one's pretty good too. But this one is, she did what she could. Now, what did she do? Well, she anointed Jesus' feet with oil and wiped it. It says, but nothing was required. Jesus didn't say, "Okay, if you want to worship me, Mary," we find out it's Mary in another version. "If you want to worship me, I need you to go and find a flask of very expensive oil and come and dump it on my head, and then I want you to wipe your hair all over my feet." How many of you ladies like that idea? You just wipe your hair all over somebody's feet. Well, of course, it's got perfume on it, so I guess it's okay. She did what she could, and it wasn't required. A lot of times, I think we get into the mode of thinking that we only do exactly what is required and no more. Or that we just do exactly what is required, and anything that's not required, if I can't find it exactly in there, even if it's a good thing to do, I can't do that. That's against the rules. And so we start putting up rules, but the rules are actually there for an excuse, not because it actually is a rule. And Jesus said, "Leave her alone. She did what she could. She did something that wasn't expected, wasn't planned, wasn't part of a requirement, and Jesus was pleased." Notice, he accepted it. He accepted it to the point that he backed her up and praised her and said something that we won't ever get. Can you imagine this? This incident happened almost 2,000 years ago, and we are not the first people to discover it. Talk about notoriety. I mean, you think, go back 5 years to your favorite Alabama football player. Are they still even in the news 5 years later? Well, other than the ones that got picked up for drugs, those. Are they in the news? Hardly. This lady is in the Bible. Wow, what a blessing. Can you imagine being listed in the Bible as an example of what doing something that was beyond what was required? Wow, what a blessing. What a blessing to have Jesus say, "Leave her alone." Everything that she did. Now, what did it cost her? Some kind of bottle of ointment that cost 300 denarii. You know how much that is? A year's salary. You're talking about basically a year's salary. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be buying bottles of perfume that cost my entire year's salary. I know they exist out there, but I wouldn't be buying them. I've got better things to do with my money. She bought something very expensive, and she poured it on Jesus' head. Now, how do I know that she was zealous? That's what accepts it as word. Mary is zealous. How do I know she is zealous? Because she broke the bottle. Think about that one. Once you break the bottle, can you put the stuff back in? Nope. She committed to it right at the beginning. Almost like she was determined to go through with it regardless of what anybody says and tries to stop her. She committed immediately. Matter of fact, if you think about it, most of us would have probably had a stopper. She could have opened the stopper. Now, my understanding is nard is sold only in vials that can only be broken open, but I don't know that for sure. But let's say she had the ability to cut it off or do something so that she could reseal it. You know, when somebody says, "Hey, at least let us have half," but she broke it and then started to pour. She didn't announce it; she just did. Isn't that fabulous when you start to think about what did it take to just say, oh, whole year's salary, one bottle of oil, drop it on Jesus' head, break the bottle so nobody can stop me. I'm going to do this. This is one committed lady. This is fabulous on there. She was zealous. That's the thing that got her praise. Not because it was an expensive bottle. It was because of her attitude. It was because of what she was doing. So, what do we want out of life? A lot of times what we are looking for in life is we're looking for some sort of even keel thing. We're not looking for going beyond. But what it's saying is just go beyond. And the nice thing about zeal is going beyond doesn't require that I go beyond greatly tomorrow. Because zeal requires a little bit of stamina. You have to, I mean, if you try to do it the first day, try make a New Year's resolution in the middle of August, and you're going to join the gym. Go to the gym, work out for 3 hours the first day. You do that, guess what's going to happen? You will never visit the gym the rest of the year. No matter how much you paid for the membership. It's a guarantee. Because you're not ready for it. You're going to be so sore, you're not going to want to go back, you're going to just be tired, and you're not going to want to do that. The same thing goes with our zeal with our religious life. A lot of times people say, well, I don't have that kind of zeal. Just have a little more than you had yesterday. Really, that's the real key. Just a little more. Whatever it is, you always show up late on for services. I'm just, you know, not trying to pick on anybody. I don't even know who's late. So if you're one of the late people, I'm not picking on you. But if that's one of your things that you're often late, come 1 minute earlier next time. Just 1 minute. Maybe it gets a little bit to be a little habit. 1 minute earlier then. 1 minute earlier then. Find something, some other pattern. Maybe you're giving. Maybe you're one of those people who doesn't give a whole lot. Contribution. Oh, well, you know, I've got this or that. At least give a little more. You know, if you haven't got to the point where you could look at your stuff and say, I am zealous in my giving. I am zealous in my attendance. I am zealous in the way I teach. Just do it a little more. It doesn't require that you jump off the ledge. Just a little more, a little more. That's the sermon that I have. This one much of a length of a sermon. I could have been this morning, too, at this. This is the encouragement that I have. Let's be a little more zealous. Let's look to see what we can do for God. Let's be the kind of people that he needs us to be. And, of course, we always have the opportunity, and we leave the opportunity open for those who would like to become members of the church, would like to be members of Christ's church. Not ours, Christ's church. And we always leave the invitation open. We ask if you think about it right now, you want to become a Christian. you want to be a servant of child of God. Now is a good time. Making it right, if you've messed up your life, making it right, now is a good time. So if in any way that you're subject to the invitation, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing.